Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
And good morning again, everybody. Well, we always look forward to joining with great friends here on the program. And we've got a great friend on the line right now. She's going to be joining us here in just a moment. Bridget Blitz. She is a partner at Taylor & Associates, specializing in working with trucking companies on the legal end of things. And today, on Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget, we're going to talk about the routes to getting paid, especially if you're not getting paid. What can you do? And what can you do maybe before things become a problem? And then what do you do afterwards? So there's a lot of important information coming your way in just a moment on our Protecting Your Livelihood segment with Bridget Blitz from Taylor & Associates. Cash flow on low or on empty?
Cash flow is the lifeblood of every business. Express Freight Finance knows that without cash flow, it's hard to keep the wheels turning.
Need a cash flow fill-up? Turn your freight bills into cash fast with Express Freight Finance. Most companies get their cash within 24 hours. Ask about Express Freight Finance fuel cards, fuel advances, and their free partner load board.
Express Freight Finance. Industry trusted. Nemo approved.
Call 435-214-0981. That's 435-214-0981.
Hello, I'm Barry Richards, Executive Vice President of Commercial Operations for TAM Petro. September 10th through 16th is National Truck Driver Appreciation Week. I wanted to take this time to thank you, the millions of hardworking men and women who are part of one of our nation's most essential industries, professional truck driving. TAM Petro supports drivers across the country with programs that honor and help them, such as Stay Fit, Band Together for the St. Christopher Fund, the Citizen Driver Award, and many more. We pledge to continue finding ways to make your lives on the road better with the amenity and services you deserve. It's about respect for you and all you do and making you feel welcome every time you're here. Happy National Truck Driver Appreciation Week from all of us here at TAM Petro, and thank you.
It is time for Protecting Your Livelihood with Bridget, Bridget Blitz from Taylor & Associates. She is one of the associates, one of the partners, I should say. And Bridget, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing this morning?
Doing good. It was such a thrill to get a chance to see you in person for the first time. I was talking to Tim at the beginning of the program saying, you know, it's funny how you can make some great friends here on the program and never really ever meet them in person. And we had the opportunity to have a little lunch there at in the lobby at the truck show down in Dallas. And it was really great to share some airspace with you there. But speaking of airspace, I heard from our good friend Homer Hogg with TA Petro, scheduled to do maintenance matters tomorrow morning. He and his family recently moved to Tampa. They're already on the road to Nashville. They're already moving north. You're over on the Atlantic side of Florida, and I understand you're about ready to head out to the mountains, huh?
Yeah, I'm right in the path in central Florida here. So being from Colorado, I can handle the blizzards, drive on ice. But when it comes to hurricanes, I'm not quite sure what to do. Now, my husband, he's a native Floridian. He's like, oh, this will be no problem. We'll just hunker down. But the grocery stores, things are falling off of the shelves. There's not much left. Lots of gas lines there. So folks here are definitely preparing.
Well, you tell him he can hunker down there. You're going to hunker down in Colorado.
That's right. I'm going to go back to my mountains, right? No, he's used to it. I'm not, but that's right. But, Dave, it was such a pleasure to meet you and an honor to meet your whole family and team there. So glad that we had that opportunity at GATT. Such great folks there as well to meet. in person, which is always nice, right?
It certainly is. Certainly is. Well, but we better get to work here because you've got some really in-depth information for us about getting paid. And I guess to set the stage, maybe there's a story of non-payment and some of the pitfalls that you'll find in contracts. You really got to read those things, right? Or have somebody like you read them.
Yes. So always, you know, my recommendation is to have qualified counsel review these transportation contracts before signing on with a broker or a shipper. But I thought in light of the Labor Day weekend that this would be an appropriate topic. And it's one that it comes across my desk so often and near and dear to so many of our clients and listeners here, because the issue is that, and the premise, the story is that you have a relationship that you want to start with a broker or perhaps with a shipper. It's going to open opportunities for you as a motor carrier, as an owner-operator. So you either lend credit to the broker or the shipper, or you start hauling shipments. And you're expecting, let's say, pursuant to the contract, you're going to get paid in 30 days. Well, obviously, that means that you as the carrier owner-operator, you're advancing all these costs to get that shipment there, and then now you're waiting 30 days to get paid. And some folks, a lot of folks, use factoring companies to help make ends meet in between those times. But then what happens if 30 days comes and goes and your broker is out of business? Or perhaps in some of the more severe circumstances we see, the motor carriers keep expecting to getting paid, and then all of a sudden they have $100,000 or $500,000 in freight pay that they have to collect. So not only are they out all their operating expenses to ultimately make those transportation shipments get to the ultimate destination, but now they're out their freight pay as well. So I wanted to kind of go through a couple items here, things that I've encountered over my years of practice, cases that we've handled, and some traps that I see in the industry. And the first one, and I'll start off with, is the contract. And that's usually the first opportunity there for a carrier to make a mistake is say that either that this is a non-negotiable contract because they don't feel that they have enough bargaining power, or they don't have the time, they're focused on the bottom line. And so what we see in, for example, broker contracts is certain provisions that will restrict or result in a waiver of the carrier's rights to collect payment. And so one of the first things that they'll typically do is the broker or the shipper will say, we are going to assert what's called a general lien over, let's say, the freight pay in the event of a cargo claim. So if we have a cargo loss that happened, not only is the broker or the shipper going to be able to withhold payment for that particular shipment that resulted in the cargo loss, but if there were previous shipments that the motor carrier is entitled to payment, the broker or the shipper is going to be able to withhold all those previous shipments for which the motor carrier is entitled to payment. So
wow.
Now what, yes, so that's the difference between what we call a specific and a general lien. There are some states, in Florida, for example, that you can assert a specific lien over a cargo loss, but contractually, what brokers are doing for their shippers or what shippers are doing for themselves to protect themselves in the event of a cargo loss is they're going to say, we have a right, motor carrier, to withhold all payment that you are due if there is a cargo loss. Right. And the problem with that is, what do we want? We want brokers, we want shippers to rely on the insurance that the motor carrier has obtained. say, $100,000 worth of cargo insurance and file the claim with the cargo insurer and pursue the claims handling procedures for that cargo loss and not withhold payment of that freight, because that's going to cripple the carrier in paying their operating expenses when all of a sudden what they were expecting to come in as payment has now hurt their bottom line and their ability to pay their accounts payable.
So I would imagine that a general lien, I mean, I can, yeah, well, let me just say it this way, and then you tell me what you think too. As a layman, I would think that a specific lien is kind of okay. A general lien would never be okay.
Right. So when I would negotiate contracts on behalf of the motor carrier, we review that language, and we strike through those provisions that state that the broker or the shipper, depending on who the contracting party is, has a right to a general lien for cargo claims or any indemnity rights that may be set forth in the contract. Again, because we want the shipper or the broker to seek the cargo insurance that the motor carrier has rather than not paying the motor carrier for the freight pay, not only for the shipment that just was delivered, but also for all other shipments that the carrier is due.
Do you run into this a lot where somebody has signed a contract with a general lien, there is a cargo loss, and now they're maybe even almost going out of business? Is it a common thing to get caught in that?
Oh, very much so, yes. It is extremely common. I mean, it is when you're negotiating on behalf of the shipper and the broker that you're going to see that in the forms. It's one of those recitals that is in there, and either the carrier decides they accept that business decision, they take on a risk of non-payment if they can't negotiate where that provision is eliminated, or they just don't read the contract and they sign the contract because of the expectation and volume of work that they're going to get from that broker or get from that shipper. But you should always be aware that what you're signing, because unfortunately, it may be you're getting great routes, lanes, and payment, but all it takes is that one loss, and all of a sudden, you're, as a motor carrier, under pressure to now get the insurance to step up and pay for that loss, that cargo loss, so that you can collect your freight pay from the shipper or the broker.
And I would imagine that the shipper would want to put a lien on the carrier as opposed to relying on insurance, is because it's just easier for them. It's less hassle. It's more of an assurance of compensation. In other words, what is the motivation to put that clause in a contract for the shipper itself?
It's security, right? I mean, because the sophisticated shipper will say to its motor carriers, we're going to require you, for example, to have $100,000 worth of cargo insurance, and we're going to notify you in writing in advance if there's any cargo shipment that exceeds that amount, but we're going to require you to have a cargo insurance with an insurance carrier that has an AM best rating of A- or A, because they want to contract with those insurance carriers or have those insurance carriers that have that rating, so they're hopefully reducing their risk that the insurance won't will deny that claim. But yes, it's just another measure of security for the shippers and for the brokers to say, motor carrier, we're tendering you this freight. We are relying on you to have the insurance that we're contractually requiring you to have with that reputable insurance carrier, and this is a measure for us to ensure that you're fulfilling your obligations, and therefore, if you want to contract with us and have our freight that's a risk that you're going to have to assume. Now, us on the other side of the aisle here on the motor carrier, arguing on behalf of the motor carrier, saying, yes, but look, here's our certificate of insurance. Here is the insurance carrier that we have in place in the event of a cargo loss. And we've added you, the shipper or broker, as a loss payee in the event of a cargo claim. So we can also respond or reciprocate with there's measures that we have taken as a motor carrier to ensure that you're going to get paid in the event of a cargo loss. So we try to negotiate out that general lien. And it's going to be, you know, case by case with each individual shipper or broker that you contract with and what they're willing to do. But I always say, make sure you read those contracts and get qualified counsel so you understand what you're waiving in those contracts. Now, the general lien may be something that jumps out at the motor carrier, but something more innocuous would be a waiver of rights under what's called 49 U.S.C. 14101B. Which is basically the death knell of all your rights that you can try to claim under Title 49. And this, again, is a measure by which there is opportunities for a motor carrier to collect payment against the shipper or the receiver. And there's actually a statute on point, and it's 49 U.S.C. 13706 that talks about that. Among many other rights and remedies under Title 49, including what we've talked about in the past, the Carmack Amendment, cargo claims. But when you have that language in there, that's that waiver under 14101B, you now as a motor carrier are saying, for the most part, unless anything is assumed and written back into the contract, that your common law principles are going to govern that relationship. So there's going to be, you know, questions of whether there's a material breach of contract rather than looking to a specific statute for relief. So it's not only, you know, some of the things that made me jump out as a general lien, but what are those statutory references? What do they mean to you and your business when all of a sudden you can't get paid and there's a 14101B waiver? And similarly to that is and often, again, this is par for the course, a waiver of rights to seek recourse against the shipper and the receiver. So you have to understand that if you're contracting with a broker, you're contracting with a shipper, and you see this language, it's going to mean that in the event that you've contracted with a broker and the broker goes out of business, or you contracted with a shipper and they have non-recourse against the shipper, that the ability to collect either from the shipper or from other parties may have been contractually waived, absent any other defenses you might be able to assert, like fraud, for example, but that they have been waived because you've agreed to that in the contract. And it doesn't matter if you've read it or not. You have a duty to read. So if you put your signature on the contract and you say, well, I just signed it, but I didn't have time to read it, right? Unless you were induced by fraud or if your signature was forged, you're going to be held to that contract.
So right? you don't fall for the, this is just the standard contract. Go ahead and sign here on page 97 and you'll be fine, right? You can't go on a verbal okay there, a verbal assurance. And you're essentially kind of signing your life away in that case if you have that 14101B waiver.
Right, right. And the other snag is, what if the broker, the shipper sends you the contract, you don't sign it, but then you go ahead and proceed to actually take on those shipments and take on that work and start getting paid. There's the argument now that you've accepted by performance. So you think, oh, I'm just not going to sign this. They won't follow up on it, and we'll just proceed. You know, the bill of lading will be the basic transportation contract. Well, no, you know, there's arguments around that as well, that there's been acceptance by performance. So very, very important subject for our listeners here is making sure that they know what's in their contracts and I can tell you that there's a lot of contracts that come in and out of the carrier's business, and they just sign them because it's bringing in more freight, more lanes. But if you don't understand what you're signing, all it takes is that one time.
So you're essentially hanging by a thread. As long as the thread holds, you're fine, but it only takes one thread to break before you could, I guess, be out of business. I mean, it could get that egregious, right?
Oh, certainly it can, and that's why I always recommend that you make sure that you're getting paid. Don't just assume that you're going to get this big cash payment of $100,000 or $250,000, whatever the case may be. The issue may be that you're doing all this work and the broker's out of business or the broker's insolvent, and so when you go to collect on that freight payment and you go to sue the broker, the broker's out. And of course, you have your surety bond, your $75,000 surety bond in place, but you know how many other people are in line to collect on that bond as well? And so you really want to manage your receivables and not let it get to the point where you're 60, 90, 120, 6 months out from that freight payment because you're getting more and more at risk of non-payment and having your expenses paid. So we've had that situation, unfortunately. So we want to make sure that there's other measures in place. And that, number one, we haven't waived anything in the contract. And then secondly is we also want to make sure that we're preserving our rights in the bill of lading. So the bill of lading is your basic transportation law contract. And the parties to that bill of lading are the shipper, the receiver, and the motor carrier. Now, sometimes the shipper and the receiver are the same folks. And oftentimes brokers will be inserted as a bill to party. But in the absence of a contract indicating otherwise, the uniform bill of lading can be a way for the motor carrier to seek recourse against the shipper and secondarily the receiver, even if it means that the shipper and the receiver have to pay twice.
And I think right there is a great place to take a break. We'll break for news and weather here at the bottom of the hour, Bridget, because there is another phrase called non-recourse provision. And as you say in your notes, watch out for the non-recourse provision. So this really deserves a lot of examination. So we'll get to that here in just a little bit. And we'll be right back with Bridget Blitch on this month's edition of Protecting Your Livelihood. Bridget is a partner at Taylor & Associates Law Firm in Florida, and we'll be right back. Hurry into Sapp Brothers on the double.
Double Dutch? Double mint chocolate chip?
No, double coin.
Double coin drive tires. One of the best warranties out there.
Exactly. Buy 7 double coin drive tires at only $299.99 each.
Don't drivers need 8 tires?
Sapp Brothers makes that 8th tire free.
Oh, then it makes sense to change to double coin. Hear what I did there?
I heard. Of course, price does not include FET, labor, valve, stamp, state, or local taxes.
Well, of course.
So hurry into Sapp Brothers on the double for the double coin special through September 30th. Buy 7, get the 8th one free.
At Sapp Brothers, where they do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Hey, truck drivers. Did you know that according to the National Transportation Institute, Schaefer trucking drivers average 7% more miles than other drivers in the industry? Plus, with a new cruise speed increase to 65 miles per hour, top pay and full benefits package, top drivers average more than $72,000 per year. What are you waiting for? Make your move today. Call Schaefer Trucking now at 888-995-5809 or visit SchaeferJobs.com.
News and weather coming up. Bridget Blick joins us again on the other side for more on protecting your livelihood, routes to getting paid. Hey, Bridget.
Yeah?
I didn't get a chance to say good morning earlier. I was running in the studio right as the tried to get my coffee quick, and I didn't quite make it. But good morning. And again, good it was morning. Really, really great to see you in person. Hey, listen, about a year ago or so, we first met via Skype when you were at the Women in Trucking Conference. I am at Claire Marie and I are actually coming over to Kansas City, going over to Kansas City for this year's event. We're going to broadcast a couple of mornings there. Any chance of you getting that way?
Well, I sure hope so. I have the Transportation Law Institute that week that I'm going to be co-chairing, so I'm just coordinating my schedule, but my hope is that I can go. I certainly am a big supporter of women in trucking and been talking to the folks over there about going.
Fantastic. We're going to, looks like we're going to, it's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We're going to get in on Monday afternoon. Then we'll broadcast for 2 hours on Tuesday morning and then again on Wednesday morning. So if that makes any difference in your, or just to let you know that that's when we'll be on, because if you're there, we certainly want you to come on the show, obviously.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and it would be an honor and a pleasure as always. And yeah, let me firm up my schedule on my end, and then if there's any, you know, you can let me know what I can do to help with the program.
Fantastic. If you go, would you wind up on a panel like you were on before?
I don't know if that is going to be in the cards this time. I don't see in their rundown of topics any legal issues. Like, we had a legal panel last year.
Right.
So it looks more business operational related topics. I think they may still be nailing down all the fine points. I gave them a list of topics that I thought may be of interest to them and their members. So I think they're still looking that over and seeing what they want to work in to their program.
Got it. Well, we'll just keep each other in the loop on that.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, you have 2 minutes to get some coffee.
So
okay. Go ahead.
yes, priorities. As I
well, exactly.
I have my husband take my little one to school every morning when I do the show. So that's the first thing I go is I get my cup of coffee and I come here and get all my materials ready. So I completely understand.
All right. Well, I'll catch you on at the end of news. Got about a minute here.
All right. Sounds great, Dave.
back to the Dave Nemo Show.
And right back to protecting your livelihood with Bridget Blick from Taylor and Associates. So, Bridget, we've talked about the general problems in contracts, liens, whether it be a specific lien or a worse general lien. We've talked about the waiver of rights that you can really just sign away. And what about trying to get recourse? And there is a non-recourse provision that you say watch out for.
Yes. So one of the issues that we see in contracts with brokers and shippers is that they want to either protect the shipper or the receiver, that is their clients, from having to pay twice, meaning having to pay the broker, and then if the broker is insolvent, having to pay the motor carrier. So oftentimes what we see in these transportation contracts is a waiver of the motor carrier's right to seek recourse against the shipper and the receiver. And so what this is in the Uniform Bill of Lading, there's what's known as Section 7, which is a term and condition of carriage that says that the consignor or consignee, which is your shipper receiver, shall be liable for the freight and other lawful charges accruing on the shipment as billed or corrected, except, right, and here's the exception, where they, that is the shipper or the receiver, sign the non-recourse provision in the space provided on the bill of lading. So there is a section on the Uniform Bill of Lading that says for shipments, if the shipment is to be delivered to the receiver or consignee without recourse on the shipper, consignor, the shipper shall sign the following statement. And so that puts the motor carrier on notice that if the non-recourse clause is signed by the shipper and no provision is made for the payment of freight, then delivery of the shipment to the receiver relieves the shipper of any liability for that freight payment. Similarly, when the prepaid provision in the bill of lading has been marked and the receiver has already paid its bill to the shipper, the receiver is not liable to the motor carrier for the payment of freight charges, right? So you have to look at the bill of lading and see if that non-recourse provision has been signed by the shipper, or if your bill of lading has been marked freight charges are prepaid. And if they have not been marked, what we argue when we're going to seek payment and collect payment for freight charges when, let's say, the broker has gone out of business, is we say we have the right to collect our freight pay from the shipper first, and then secondarily from the receiver. And that's because under contract law, your bill of lading is your contract. And that is the tool that the motor carrier can use to secure payment, even if it means that the shipper and the receiver have to pay twice. And that line of authority came out of a well-known case, which is the Oak Harbor Freight Lines case in 2008 out of the Ninth Circuit, which has since been, for example, adopted in various jurisdictions such as Florida. But the concept is that you are, as a motor carrier, contracting with the shipper and the receiver. And the best person to protect themselves is going to be the shipper and the receiver in the bill of lading. And so the line of authority say we are going to put that onus on the shipper and the receiver to either execute the non-recourse provision or to mark the bill of lading prepaid. So there's that opportunity for the shipper and the receiver to protect themselves. And the other catch-all is in the contracts where we talked about. So So you can't just rely on when you're a motor carrier and say, great. All right, it hasn't been marked prepaid. It's not, the non-recourse provision isn't selected, so I can go back to the shipper and the receiver. That's provided you haven't waived your rights in a contract, right? And the Oak Harbor, the Oak Harbor case is that, you know, it's not unfair, right, to the shipper and the receiver because they have that ability to protect themselves. And if I can quote, there's another line of authority from an XL Transportation Services case out of the Southern District of Texas, which says, while it may seem superficially unfair that a consignor or a consignee may have the right to pay twice for the same shipment, allowing them the benefit of carriage without compensating the carrier would eventually cripple the shipping industry and the economy generally. So these lines of cases support the motor carrier's right to go after the shipper and the receiver, even if it means they paid twice, provided, of course, that they haven't otherwise waived that right in a contract with the broker or the shipper. And be careful, because the broker can bind the rights of the motor carrier. So even if you think, well, I've only signed a contract with the broker, I can still go after the shipper or the receiver, be careful, because the broker may have you may have waived that right through your contract with the broker, even if you didn't contract directly with the shipper.
We'll take a break right here, and then we're going to move into something that I promised our listeners that you would get into this morning, and that is collecting from the government. And if we have time, we'll talk about construction contractors, and I would imagine that after a disaster like Hurricane Harvey, that a lot of folks are contracting with contractors, and there may be some real pitfalls there as well. And we'll be right back with more on protecting your livelihood. Bridget Blitch is with us from Taylor & Associates.
I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I'll travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I keep hearing this thing called yoga is the way to achieve inner peace. Now, I can't twist my body around like that. Pretty sure I'd never get up again. So instead, I get my inner peace from PrePass. It's the most reliable way station bypass and e-tolling platform in North America. And right now, you can free yourself with one free month of service. PrePass saves you time, fuel, and money. And hey, no yoga pants required. Just call 888-599-PASS and use promo code NEMO, N-E-M-O, or visit prepassnow.com/NEMO to start your risk-free trial. That's 888-599-7277 or prepassnow.com/NEMO. Namaste. Well, anyway, PrePass.
If you could put hundreds of truckers back to work, if you could make one truck driver's pile of bills less daunting, if you could give a woman who delivers goods to your table one less worry, wouldn't you? Every year, thousands of truck drivers lose their jobs, homes, and more when a medical problem causes financial hardships. But with your donation to the St. Christopher Fund, you can help get them and their families back on the road. Donate today at truckersfund.org.
Load Express. It's the online freight auction and matching marketplace where you make more money because you bid directly for a load with no brokers lowballing you. Your income goes up, your overhead and hassles go down. And for you, Load Express is totally free to use. The shipper pays the commission. With Load Express, the mega fleets have nothing on you. Get paid immediately upon your clean proof of delivery. And it's all on your tablet or smartphone. With Load Express, you're never alone, never forgotten. The new way to move freight. Deal direct. No brokers. LoadExpress.com. Well, Bridget Blitch, as the old joke goes, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you.
Well, let's just say it's good to be the king.
Understood.
So this is a good subject, and one that J.W. Taylor, my managing partner, and I, we've handled cases with motor carriers where they've hauled items for the government, whether it was actually moving in soldiers across the country or other just freight all kinds. And so this, you know, the premise here, you think you got this great contract with a broker that is arranging transportation for one of our military branches, and there's a lot of volume of work that's coming out of that contract, and you know, in your mind, you think, oh, this is the government, right? I'm definitely going to get paid. There's no way that I'm not going to get paid on this work that I'm doing. There's some, you know, false sense of security there. So what we have to be wary of when we're a motor carrier and we are hauling freight for the federal government is, as you said, the doctrine of sovereign immunity. Which has its roots in the feudal fiction that the king can do no wrong, right? And it's an established element of jurisprudence in all civilized nations, which down to its essence means that the government cannot be sued without its consent. So there is a wealth of authority on this issue, but I want to narrow down and focus on a particular case that we handled that I think just highlights another trap where you can get into a situation where you've done a tremendous amount of work, put forth a lot of overhead and expense and operating expenses, and yet not get paid even when transporting for the government. So we had a situation where we had a client that had contracted with a broker, and the broker was arranging for thousands of shipments of military personnel to move across the country. And the broker was a transportation service provider, and it's a term of art that they had contracted with the government. But our client had not. They had not entered into any specific contract with the government. They were relying on the broker to feed the work to the carrier, and then the carrier would then go and transport the various shipments. And it ended up that there was about 1,300 bills of lading. And we were talking a little earlier about the shipper and the receiver being a party to a bill of lading and a party to that contract. So in our case, we had the United States government being a party to that contract, that standard uniform bill of lading. And before we had handled this case, there wasn't any precedent that said whether or not that line of theory that you're a party to a contract, a commercial contract, meaning the bill of lading, whether that can bind the United States government. Right, and one of the things that the government has in place, it's called the Tucker Act, in order to establish subject matter jurisdiction such that you can get into court and actually sue the United States government, you have to show, again, that the government consented to be sued. Did the government, in other words, enter into a contract with the motor carrier? Was it in what's called privity of contract? So we have presented a number of arguments, including that the United States government was a party to those commercial bills of lading, both being on the shipper and the receiver side, that also that pursuant to statute, the government had consented to be sued pursuant to that statute I mentioned a little earlier in the show, 49 U.S.C. 13706, which talks about the shipper and the receiver being responsible for freight payment. We made the argument that that contract authorized government to be sued when the motor carrier is providing transportation, asking for transportation arrangements. And then we also argued that the broker was an agent of the government and therefore authorized as an authorized agent, allowed the government to be bound to pay for that shipment. So that case went up to the United States Court of Federal Claims, and the result of the opinion was that the court said because the government had not issued what's called GBLs, government bills of lading, and because the broker was not actually considered an agent through the government's procedures, and it's a little complex, but it wasn't an agent of the government, that there was no right to recourse against the United States, even though it was a shipper and a receiver on the bills of lading, and even though the terms and conditions on the commercial bill of lading was the same, substantively the same, as the government bill of lading. So a little form over substance there, but it was enough that for the court to say there is nothing there that the government did to give its consent to be sued for payment of these 1,300 bills of lading, all these shipments that the carrier had transported. Now, I say that because if you're contracting with the government, it's important that you recognize and get with qualified counsel to make sure that you're taking all the steps necessary to secure your right to payment. Don't just think that the broker is an authorized agent of the United States government and is binding the government to pay you as the motor carrier in the event that the broker becomes insolvent, which is unfortunately what happened in our case. Now, a couple years later, there was a case that was also brought in the United States Federal Court of Claims and ended up going to the United States Court of Appeals in the Federal Circuit. And that case is Estes Express Lines versus the United States. And there, the court actually, it was a similar situation. Interstate Motor Carrier brought action for breach of contract against the government, seeking for transportation money for transportation services provided. But the difference in the Estes Express Lines case was that there had been an actual contract in place between the broker and the government, and notably that on those bills of lading, again, they were commercial bills of lading, but the government had actually signed off on the bill of lading as a bill to party. So that was a very important factor that the court noted in that case and distinguished it from the Central Freight Lines case that I mentioned just a few moments ago, because there was enough evidence to show that the government did consent to be sued by signing those bills of lading with the government being acknowledged as a bill to party. But again, this is a very complex area. And so I recommend all of the carriers and brokers that are contracting with the government to get with qualified counsel to make sure that everything is being done to protect your right to collect payment. Don't make the assumption that just because the government is listed, whether it's the Army or the Marines or any branch or department of the government is listed on the bill of lading, that that's going to mean that you're in privity of contract with the government. It is a very high standard to meet in order to establish subject matter jurisdiction in the Federal Court of Claims and to be able to sue the government. And even in these cases, the court said, we're not opining, in Estes Express, for example, said we're not opining on the merits of this case. We're just getting to the first step, which is to say procedurally, you've met the element of what's called subject matter jurisdiction, meaning we're going to open the doors and allow you to come into court and sue the United States government because you've established a basis for privity of contract. Now you have to go in and argue the merits of the case.
Wow. How long did that case take? Can you tell us that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, it was
was it years or?
Federal. Well, probably about a, I want to say, year and a half to go through the whole process with the court. I mean, it's very, when you go in federal court, it's very efficient. So things do move quickly. You know, as a matter of, we were negotiating with the government. We had 1,300 bills of lading that we had scanned and processed and sent over and included as and part of our briefs to the federal court. But in terms of litigation, it went fairly quickly. Oftentimes litigation is a very long process, but in the grand scheme of things, it went by quickly.
Wow. Wow.
But still, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, you have your bills to pay, it's not fast enough.
Exactly. Exactly. I think we have enough time to kind of at least go over some of the highlights of collecting from construction contractors. And I kind of made a statement promoting that, saying that, you know, with Hurricane Harvey now, quite a number of trucking companies are going to be bringing construction materials into Texas. They're going to be working with construction contractors. Is that something that you all have seen in past storms where there's kind of an uptick of problems after a natural disaster where a lot of trucks with a lot of stuff coming in?
Yes. So, and let me speak to, for example, here in Florida, where we have motor carriers that may haul aggregate or other building materials to a construction project. And what these carriers need to be aware of is that there is a right for them to secure payment. And there's two opportunities, basically, and it's going to depend on whether they're delivering construction materials to a contract for government property or for a private property. And so there are, for example, in Florida, motor carriers to construction projects have mechanisms available to them through what's called payment bonds. And these bonds are there to secure the payment in the event that, let's say, here's typically what happens. You have maybe a subcontractor that has hired the motor carrier to transport aggregate to a construction site. The subcontractor goes out of business, even though the subcontractor may have been paid by the general contractor. And so now the motor carrier wants to go back and make a claim on the payment bond in order to get paid its freight charges. Similarly, let's say we have a situation where it's a private company that owns the property. There's a general contractor, and then maybe you have another subcontractor that arranges to have a motor carrier transport building material, something to improve the property. And they come and they deliver that material. In some cases, they even purchase that material before they deliver it. And there's another mechanism, which is a construction lien, which the motor carrier, if they follow the right procedures, can follow to protect their right to payment under a lien. And so that's a device in order to leverage payment because they can assert that lien on the property. Now, both of these are very technical, have very time-sensitive limitations to them, and every time qualified counsel should be consulted when you're dealing with a motor carrier that is delivering construction materials or improving real property. So for those carriers doing that, they should seek with qualified counsel in their state to guide them through that process because it can be a very unforgiving process if you don't follow the right forms and meet the right deadlines to secure payment.
Well, thank you so much for guiding us through the last hour of some very valuable information, Bridget. Godspeed and God bless you and your family and everybody over there. And we'll look forward to our October edition of Protecting Your Livelihood. Bridget, take care.
Thank you so much, Dave. Same to you.
Bridget Blitch, everybody. She is a partner at Taylor & Associates, and we do Protecting Your Livelihood, a series with Bridget, every first Wednesday of the month.
Dr. Ed Rappaport, acting director of the National Hurricane Center. Good evening to you, Ed. You guys have been very busy lately. Give me sort of a sense of this character, Irma, and how it compares to Harvey, would you say?
Yeah, both hurricanes obviously were very severe. In the case of Harvey produced most of its damage from rainfall, and that was because the storm stalled. In this case, we're not expecting that to occur, but because Irma is so strong, the winds themselves are like